We're back here in Los Angeles at the Interim Pacifica National Board meeting in the Virgil Middle School, which is at Vermont and First. Those of you who want to come down here this afternoon or even indeed come here for lunch, there's lots of very savory food in the courtyard that Bernard White and I will not get to eat because we're eating air, Bernard. Story of our lives, right?
That's right.
Welcome and thank you very much for joining us on this national broadcast and for enabling this to be heard in New York City. We'll be broadcasting until conclusion tonight, which will probably be, oh goodness, in another 5 or 6 hours. This hour, we're going to be taking listener phone calls in a while. But Bernard, I wanted to begin by asking you about the general tenor of this board meeting as you see it. I haven't been to a Pacifica board meeting in 3 years. My last time there was that famous time when I was making a presentation in Berkeley in February of 1999, and Mary Frances Berry got up and walked out, never to be seen again in Berkeley until she came back to shut down the station a few months later. My presentation was in flowcharts and graphs to show how I thought Pacifica had completely lost its mission-driven financial structure, was wasting tons of money, had built an unresponsive and useless national bureaucracy. Of course, history will have shown me to be correct, at least in those respects. But that's the last time I was at a Pacifica National Board meeting. This is the first one that's been in Los Angeles in 4 years, and the first one on the West Coast in 3 years. However, you have had the privilege of living on the East Coast. You were among the fired and banned as program director at WBAI in the famous Christmas coup in the year 2000. But you were you had an opportunity, I believe, to go to some of those Washington board meetings since then.
Some of the Washington board meetings and the one that was in Houston. First of all, thanks for inviting me.
Oh, you're more than welcome. It's a great honor to have you with me again.
But what happens is that those were electric, you know. They were quite contentious. There was a lot of opposition. There was a lot of back and forth between those who were participating and those who were on the board. There were challenges, and you had people like Bert Lee who was threatening to get up and fight people. This is a completely different setting here. You would go through an entire meeting without hearing anybody say thank you or giving praise to anyone. This is just totally different. There's a totally different feeling that's taking place. That things have kind of turned around in a real positive way. We'll have to see how long that lasts, but at least right now there's a real positive feeling coming from both the participants who are listeners as well as those folks who were directly involved in the decision making.
And of course, as one of the speakers mentioned this morning, we also don't have any security guards, cops. We're not meeting in a fancy hotel. It's costing listeners thousands and thousands of their dollars.
Mm-hmm.
We're meeting in a public school, and the only security here is us.
That's right.
We are our own security.
That's right.
And I feel very secure.
What made us feel insecure at the other meetings was this bevy of security people. They were the only ones who were really confronting to make folks feel unsafe. But as you mentioned, I mean, everything is wide open. There are folks in the back who are selling a variety of different meals outside. There were some youth who had come through a little while earlier. Everything is open. There's no reason for it. But I think it was part of that whole corporate mentality. I guess they felt that they were like the IMF having a meeting, and they needed to have this kind of protection for themselves.
I was mentioning before, as I was briefly introducing Miguel Maldonado, that, they seem to be little maybe along the bumps along the road, but so outrageous that members of the WBAI local advisory board, the previous Pacific administration had them arrested for trying to meet in their own station. And Miguel was one of those arrested that night, and they didn't release him the next day. They pressed charges for months. They kept him in jail for days. I mean, this kind of thing is just—it's breathtaking when you think about it. Isn't it?
It absolutely is. Janice K. Bryant was also
another
arrested,
board member now,
right?
Yes.
And that never made it to the airwaves. You know, so many people didn't know until the end of the struggle that Janice and Miguel had been arrested and wound up spending a couple of days in jail.
Just not a whole lot of fun anywhere, but especially not in New York City. Bernard White, you mentioned this is, you know, sweetness and light compared to what you've been going through in board meetings for the last 3 years. But nevertheless, there are obvious tensions still here that we hear reflected in the presentations by audience members, tensions between people who feel that democratization isn't going right or might not go right, that the relations between the local advisory boards and the staffs inside the stations are less than perfect in some signal areas. What's your take on where we're going with this democratization movement? Because it seems to have, as you get in Pacifica stations, a lot of good folks with a lot of different ideas that don't necessarily listen to each other and don't necessarily have a common channel.
Well, you know, what we're seeing reflected here throughout the day, especially starting out with KPFK, is that there were some people who were deeply wounded many years ago. They cried out, and there was no, what they felt was a real response coming from others, their brother and sister stations around the network. And that they have, those wounds are still very deep. And they were saying, you know, their feeling is that, you know, we really need, if you're really serious about this, then you need to bring us back. You need to take a look at the whole, the way that Pacifica has is structured, and make sure that we won't fall, don't fall back into what we, the way that Pacifica was a couple of years ago. Where democracy is going now, it's hard to say. Democracy is
an evolving process.
It certainly is, and it continues to evolve. And we, there's no blueprint for this. So it just, it's going to take eternal vigilance. We hope that we don't get complacent, because we happen to have our own personal desires satisfied, that we begin to continue to be sensitive to those folks who are on the outside, that they too will have the ability to come in and find a place where they can tell their story.
I was talking to you the other day back on the phone when you were in New York, and I said, how's it going, Bernard? And there was this pause, and you said, man, this place has 15 program directors. I'm supposed to be a program director, and every time I turn around, somebody's in my face. You should be doing this. I should have this program. She shouldn't have that program, etc. And I told you, you know, I go way back at WBAI. I can remember John Scagliotti with an office full of people like that. I can remember Andrew Phillips with an office full of people like that. I can remember Samori Marksman, may he rest in peace, with an office full of people like that. New Yorkers are people who tend to express themselves forcefully when they want,
yes,
or don't like
do.
Something. And, you know, it eventually falls upon either a person or a structure to make those decisions, and not everybody's going to be happy with the way it comes out.
And see, that's what you have to begin to realize, that you're not going to make everybody happy. So sooner or later, you have to make a decision. And what you try and do is just to make a decision that's in the best, what you consider to be the best interest of the radio station. And I guess getting people to understand that the airtime really belongs to the station and not to them is the most difficult thing.
Boy, is it ever. There was allusion made to how difficult you people had had it in New York. And because of the divisiveness of the people who took over WBAI and who expressed themselves in terms of great prejudice and discrimination inside of an ethnicity which outsiders would have thought, well, what are they complaining about? It's all African Americans now. Mm-hmm. How come they're complaining to each other? And some of what I hear from audiences here and phone calls such as the ones we may get in a little while, you know, is everything would be much better. Everything is fine as long as we have great representation of a greater or even control by ethnic minorities. But anybody who's been alive very long realizes that so-called ethnic minorities can have great differences among themselves too, as can language minorities, as can feminists, and as can everybody else. What I always try to bring it back to is everybody on mission with Pacifica or not? Are we broadcasting in the interests of peace, social justice, and human reconciliation? Or are we broadcasting in some other tendency with some other push? And it must have been, I imagine, especially painful for you and for Valerie and for Janice and for all the other African-American programmers who were banned and fired in New York to hear other African-Americans on the air saying bad things about you.
Oh, incredible things were being said.
First don't repeat them now. I don't want to use a license.
They had to make us appear to be other than African-Americans, that we weren't the real African-Americans and that they were. And it was just, it was horrible because the what it tended to do also was to divide the community. The African-American community was played against, inside of the station, was played against the Afro-Caribbean community. So there was a division there. Then when it went to the ear, the white progressive community was the enemy of the people of color community. So all of that was being played against each other and just horribly. And some of those divisions have still not healed. We still have folks who have taken sides. I think that now, though, they're beginning to see, since we've come back into the radio station, since there's a totally different feeling that we have, and they can hear the kind of respect that we have for each other over the year. I think that there's a different feeling now, and they're recognizing that something was seriously wrong with this past administration.
You know, Bernard, I wasn't in New York except that one time, November, when you and I were in a panel in the New School, November 99, before the, you know what, it hit the fan at WBAI yet. I haven't been there during this crisis for one reason or another, but I've been following very closely on websites and on email what you've been doing. You and the other people, like Juan Gonzalez, who I just saw last week in San Francisco, he was out giving a speech, and I had the privilege of introducing him that night in New College in San Francisco. But you and Juan Gonzalez and so many other people didn't just sit on your butts and wait for this thing to be won in the law courts. You're talking about division in the African-American community. I don't know how many forums you must have spoken at in Harlem, in Brooklyn, and other places. I would get notices of all of these where you were going out into the community and saying, you're confused about this? Come hear what's really going on.
Right. Well, we had to do that because within the community, especially in the African-American community, we know that racism does exist. So to play this card and just have it uncontested would have meant that people would have walked away feeling that the move that was made at BAI was justified. So we had a responsibility to try and go out and tell people to expose what had been happening systematically throughout the network, that what happened at KPFT and what happened at KPFK, the change in format at WPFW, and what was attempted at KPFA, WBAI was just a continuation, another step in that process. And we had to convey that to people, that it wasn't a personal fight between me and Utrecht Lee, that it was a fight to save this network from some people who wanted to sell radio stations.
And one could certainly, one of the theories that, of course, we've had free speech back on KPFA since August of 1999, and I've done dozens of programs on this, some of which you've been a guest on by phone from New York. And one of the theories that's always comes up in listeners' minds, and they say it, is, well, that must have been what the Specifica Board really wanted. They wanted to drive this network into the ground, bankrupt it in one way or another, disrupt it, fire people like you and me, and then they could go to whoever and say, well, see, this place can't function, and not only that, it's bankrupt, and we've got to sell these stations. Mm-hmm. At the same time, there was the famous Murdoch proposals to change the bylaws, where they would have been able to enrich themselves, had those bylaws passed, through the sale of these stations. Mm-hmm. And you can certainly draw a thread through that now, which looks like there were folks in this who wanted to do that so that they could make a hell of a lot of money.
And folks who had a history of doing that.
And folks like Bert Lee who had a history of buying and selling radio stations, making a hell of a lot of money. Folks, we want you out there in wherever you may be listening to us today to join us. Our toll-free number for wherever you may be is 1-800-958-9008. That's 1-800-958-9008. And if our technology operates properly, Mary Bishop, back in our KPFA studios in Berkeley, will be picking up the phones and telling me and Bernard who's waiting to talk to us. 1-800-958-9008. Bernard, I thought I'd lost all my capacity for shock about this thing, but I was shocked last night when I heard the executive director's reports, and we're going to hear more about this tomorrow morning especially, say that there was a company named Decision Strategies.
Yes.
who was hired by the previous administration and their multi-million dollar law firms to do basically damage research on people like you and me, so that they could use that in a court of law. What do you know about that?
Well, this is one of the most odious parts of what has taken place, that there are this company, Decision Strategies, hired people who were with MI6, former DEA agents, FBI agents, former prosecutors, folks who, you know, just have a long history of being involved with the intelligence community, and people who probably have access and connections to folks throughout the old intelligence network, and that they were set up, we were set upon, that people were trying to find things on us that they could use to justify whatever actions that they were taking, and probably get us into all kinds of trouble. Fortunately, it doesn't appear that they've been able to find anything on any of us, except that we're silly enough to keep involved, stay involved.
Well, I'm sure they were able to find plenty of things on me. I mean, if they go back and look at my CIA and FBI files of activism dating back to the 60s, which I've never sent away for, but they're there. If they wanted to, for example, if these cases had gone to trial, the four lawsuits, and I was summoned as a witness, I could expect to be crucified or in the face of a jury, which is kind of ridiculous had it been a jury in California or Northern California. But they could have tried to discredit me and say, well, wasn't it true, Mr. Bensky, that you worked with the Black Panther Party in the 60s? Or wasn't it true that you were working with the French Communist Party against the war in Vietnam? You know, that kind of thing that they pull out over and over again. And I think that's maybe what they were up to. The problem is right now we don't have their work product. Dan Coughlin, executive director, was saying last night.
Right. We do need that. We need to get the product that we paid for. I think it was $240,000.
But we haven't paid for it. We're refusing to pay for it.
There's a dilemma there. Do we not pay for it and not get it? Or do we pay for it and keep it?
You know what? I would say I don't want to see it. Let's keep the $240,000. We've got much better use for that money. The organization is, folks, over $5 million in debt. We are going to hear a treasurer's report this afternoon when this board meeting continues. But right now, let's go to the phones. Our first caller is Everett in San Rafael, California. Thanks for joining us, Everett.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Hello?
Yeah, Everett, we can hear you.
Great. So just a quick question. I'm wondering if there's any type of lawsuits happening around the people that did the malfeasance. I'm also wondering, what would be your take on somebody who has a psychology or a belief against for the death penalty or for capital punishment or for war, but they want to work for Pacifica and they do their job? How do you deal with different...
What's their job, Everett?
Are
we talking about loyalty tests for janitors? What are we talking about here?
The job is to spread the message of peace, I guess. And if they do that...
KPFK is bringing you live coverage of the Pacifica National Board meeting in Los Angeles on 90.7 FM, KPFK, Los Angeles.
I mean, what people are hired to do when they're public affairs and news producers in this network, I would hope, Bernard White, is... be at one with the mission statement of the organization, which is to broadcast material in the interests of peace, social justice, and human reconciliation. Now, if somebody's going to go on the air and say, guess what? I think it's okay to be bombing the people of Afghanistan. And by the way, I also believe in the death penalty. There's one kind of death that I don't believe in, and that's the killing of an unborn child. You've got somebody who really has no sync, is not in sync with the mission statement. So it's, that's a no-brainer. What are they doing on this station? It can work in any other broadcast institution.
Well, one of the first things that we had a producers meeting last week, and one of the first things I did was refer, the first item on the agenda, actually, was to request that all of the producers download from the Pacifica website Lou Hill's The Theory of Listener-Sponsored Radio, because I think it begins to put us all on the same page, that if and you'll be able to tell which persons didn't download it by in short measure. But that's what we have to do. I think we have to, you know, one of the things that we've departed from is the way that folks came into to Pacifica. We right now bring people in. We seem to bring folks in, sit them down in front of a microphone and say, go. When you and I came in, we sat down with pieces of tape. We worked out trying to put a program together with a beginning, a middle, and an end. And then, you know, would try and lobby to get that program on the air. People need to go. We need to go back to that. We need to go back to people learning how really to do radio, because that's what Pacifica provides. It provides us an opportunity to be creative. The other networks are the ones who have, you're engineering yourself right now. The other network, you'd have an engineer.
I'd have five people here.
You'd have three or four engineers. Jim Bennett is here too.
He certainly
But you'd
is.
Have a, you know, you'd have a bunch of folks. Somebody would be running to get you water, and, you know, we got to stop developing these prima donnas and get people back to dealing with every aspect of radio.
That's a good answer, but I think also it really needs to be remembered that it's not about what you are. It's why you are that you have to be keeping in mind when you broadcast on a Pacifica station. It's not about your gender, your ethnicity, your sexual orientation, your age, your disability or lack thereof. Obviously, we have to have as broad as possible diversity as possible, but we do have a mission in this organization. Bernard's absolutely right. Anybody out there who doesn't know what it is, go to www.pacifica.org. And if you want to know more about the struggle that Bernard and I have been through over these years, especially the last few, go to www.savepacifica.net, which is a website that is run by Friends of Free Speech Radio that I was one of the people, I'm proud to say, most involved with, and you'll see more than probably you ever want to know about further information about this. You may not know about it very much because, especially down here in Southern California, a lot of this wasn't allowed on the air. Lawrence in Berkeley is our next caller. Hi, Lawrence.
Yeah, hi. Good morning, Larry. How you doing?
Well, it's not morning down here anymore, Lawrence. You may have just woken up at 2 in the afternoon.
I'm late. Okay, good afternoon. Yeah, I'm glad you've been talking about the subject of democratization and the local democratization on the local stations. So I was on the committee that helped write the bylaws for electing the local advisory board here in Berkeley. And what I wanted to point out, you know, to all the other people in the other four stations is that we came up with a formula where we had 22 members, 14 of whom would be elected by members, by listeners, and 8 of whom were elected by workers in the station, some paid and some non-paid. And essentially what we created was a worker community alliance, an active worker community alliance with both people elected on both sides.
Potentially an alliance, Lawrence. It's not quite alive yet.
Okay.
I mean, let's be real. We're just in a...
I think it's a wonderful thing. I think it modeled not only, you know, that kind of alliance of workers and community members, not only for Pacifica stations, but, you know, as a model for society at large. But aside from that, there are problems, which is, the main problem is that we don't have, the local advisory board is strictly advisory for the most part, and I'm hoping that as time goes on, that kind of democratic community board that we have will be more and more of a governing board rather than an advisory board. Practical, you know, division of power on the station right now is that you have the local advisory board with advisory powers, and you also have the program council, which is mostly staff members from the station who get to decide which programs are on and make comments, you know, and control. And at some point, I would hope that those two powers of the local advisory board and the program council need to be brought together so that there's more democratic accountability to the program council. I'm not exactly sure how to do that. I haven't got a...
Lawrence, have you ever read Lou Hill's statement of theory of listener-sponsored radio?
No, I haven't.
Well, you see, I think you need to, and I think everybody needs to, and this is no knock on you, but this is a very good suggestion that Bernard White comes up with here. We can tinker with systems all we want to, but if we are not able to be in sync with what it is we're supposed to be doing here, then a lot of bad things will never be gotten rid of. Inside stations, you traditionally get a lot of me-ism, a lot of egotism, a certain amount of careerism, a certain amount of cynicism, too.
Sounds like BAI.
No, I'm saying, I say, within the stations. Yeah, within the stations, you know, all of them. I've been around these positions for 32 years now. I think I've been able to observe a few things. And you can perfect this great system and put in place mechanisms all you want to, like elections and participation and stuff like that. If people aren't on the same page, then you're going to have all the human frailties compounded by the fact that those of us who work inside Pacifica stations usually have strong feelings. We're shut out of a lot of the rest of society. We're dissidents, etc. And we feel marginalized in a lot of cases. So you're going to get a lot of divisiveness if everybody isn't with the mission. So I'm not so much concerned about the mechanics of who gets elected and who talks to who. I'm concerned about how are we going to figure out how to do programming in the spirit of the mission.
No, absolutely, because there are as many theories about how we can work, about what democracy will look like, as there are people analyzing it. And what is missing, what would be the unifying piece of it, is that people are in line, as you say, with the mission. And I think that's one of the reasons that we fell short at WBAI and led to the coup, that people had no... Many of them involved had no idea of what the mission was. And how that could have happened is something that we need to address. We need to make sure that when people come in, they know about the mission, and we need to continue to talk about the mission for the whole time that we're there.
Bernard White and Larry Bensky are the two people you're hearing now at the belated lunch break, which we don't get to eat. But later, maybe, for you and me, Bernard, like tonight. 1-800-958-9008 is our toll-free number from wherever you may be. 1-800-958-9008. Lynch, is that your name from New York City? I didn't quite get it.
No, it's Richard.
Richard?
New York.
Rich. Hi, Rich.
Hi.
Sorry about that.
Hi, Bernard.
Hi.
Larry, well, Bernard, it was wonderful to hear you speak at the People's Organization for Progress on Thursday night.
Well, thank you.
Again, I want to thank you for the grace and class you showed with your kind remarks about Utrice, which I'm sure she's not going to echo tomorrow when she speaks in Newark. But be that as it may, I just want to thank you for that. And also, the question I have for you, in along the hills of what was just stated by the last caller, and Larry's follow-up about the mission state of the Pacific, I think part of the hostility has been directed at you, Valerie, and Amy Goodman in particular, by the outgoing coup that was overthrown just recently by the good graces of the listeners and the Pacifica Network supporters nationwide, was the fact that it appears to the people that are in opposition to you that you and Valerie and Amy had too much power. I think that was at the core of it, that you essentially wearing two hats would wake up call and as the program director for DAI and Amy with her, you know, co-hosting the show and having her national show with Democracy Now, and Valerie being an embattled general station manager, we're seen as, I think, both locally and nationally as having too much power and not really being responsive to a certain minority segment. Now,
individuals are doing what they're doing, or is it a general objection to people doing so much so that others can't do so much? Because, you see, I'm trying to pull this back to the mission statement again. If Amy Goodman and Bernard White and Valerie Van Isler and whoever are broadcasting and acting in accord with the mission statement and pursuing peace and social justice programming, what's your problem?
I think I don't share this belief, okay? I have no problem with it being the way it is. But I think the forces that still seek to undermine what's going on in Pacifica are using this kind of perception to try to still derail the mission of BAI in particular and Pacifica in general.
Okay, let's get an answer from Bernard White.
Does that mean too much power?
Thank you, Rich, for calling. Bernard, what do you think?
Well, I think that those people who did take over WBAI would have used anything that they could, and that was they pointed to that. But this is the thing, that I had gotten the position of program director. When you're a program director, one of the first things you recognize is that when you get rid of one thing, you have to replace it with something else. the formula that we use in the morning show, or getting a working formula for a morning program, is extremely important. You can't get 10 people in a room and then just pick one of them. You have to get the person to fit that particular position. As you know, I tried one person, and it was an utter failure. And then I wound up coming back. We put out a call for people to submit resumes for the position of program director. I got people, and this is not a knock on folks who work in restaurants, but I got one person who came from McDonald's, one from Burger King, and other people who just wanted to get on the air, had no understanding. When you do a morning program for Pacifica, you have to know what's happening in the world. Not that I'm an expert, but
yes, you are. I've heard your program many times. What time do you get up in the morning and start reading the papers? Come on.
About 4:30.
4 a.m., yeah.
Wake up with CNN.
Any of us who do that kind of morning work are junkies, info junkies. And if you have somebody who doesn't know what's going on in the world,
right,
how are they going to get on in the morning? That's
right.
People want to be informed.
And you have to have absorbed these things to the point which you can make references to other things, because it's about teaching in the morning, too. So we have to find that kind of person. Now, I'm only getting paid for one position, and I'm doing two
full-time.
Exactly. Ted Koppel was making $8
million. Yeah, maybe we can get Ted on the WBAI morning. So there's something else, Smorey, which I think listeners don't sufficiently appreciate. And I don't hear hardly anybody in the speakers who come up here from community groups, and I don't hear at KPFA either. You have to have a consideration for listeners. It's not just what group or what interest or what segment or what ethnicity am I going to put on the air and zap you on the air.
Mm-hmm.
You're putting somebody on the air in the morning, they're just waking up. They want to have somebody that they can relate to. It's a certain type of personality. It's a certain way of presenting yourself. It's a certain music you play if you play music. It's not, oh boy, I got a show and I'm just going to be blasting out of the speakers because it's my show and it happens to be on from 6 to 7 in the morning. Think of who's waking up then and what they want to hear and what they're used
exactly.
to.
Exactly.
And people, that is, radio is a craft as well as a political institution in Pacifica. And if you don't pay attention to that, you're turning more people off than you're adding.
Right. New York City has a particular rhythm. You have to be able to put your finger on the pulse of that rhythm and go with it. Folks wake up in a particular way. Many people are working for jobs that they can't stand.
You know, sometimes.
That's right. And they get up and, you know, they don't want to go to work. And, you know, you got to work through that. And as they get up slowly, and then they pick up speed as it gets closer to the time to leave the house. And you need to, you know, you have to be sensitive to all of that. And I'm glad you said it, because it sounds like I'm tooting my own horn.
No, I'll toot your horn, because I've been in New York many, many mornings over the course of my life when you and Amy have been on the air. And I listen to you, too, and you have very different rhythms, very different everythings. But it works as a team. And if you can't feel your way for that, this is Samori Marksman always used to talk about this to people, and they didn't get it. He'd say it's not just about going on a radio, blasting out the most radical thing you can and making a speech. If you can't get people to listen and relate to it, it's just not any good. And that doesn't just come. Not everybody can do it. And you have to have appreciation of the day parts. Here in L.A., we got a guy named Roy Tuckman, Roy from Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
He's on from midnight to 6 a.m. I was down here a couple of weeks ago helping them with a fundraiser. The guy raised $25,000 overnight from midnight to 6 a.m. Why is that? Because he knows how to relate to a city that never sleeps, like Los Angeles and places around here. He's got a killer audience who trusts him, who's been on the air with him for a long time. That counts. That matters. You know, and if you don't treat your radio station as something that's going to be used as a fine instrument to reach people, but just say, well, we'll take this off, we'll put this on, we'll try this here, we'll try this there, this will be on here, this will be on there, because it should be on, then you're leaving the listeners out in how people use radio.
That's right.
That's a big mistake.
And you know, what happens right now, too, since I've gotten back, that there are a lot of people who want to hear a lot of different things and believe that they should be on the radio. But they forget that we only got 168 hours.
How many will stretch
only, that? And only 84 of those come between 6 in the morning and midnight. And the rest is in the overnight. And they want, you cannot, you know, it's a finite amount of time. You can put everything in there. But we're going to see what we can do with alternating, giving people series that'll run a certain time and then, you know, have other series follow.
Garson in Long Island, thanks for your patience. Thanks for joining us on Pacifica.
Hello.
Hi, Garson.
It's good to hear you, Mr. Dr. Y, Mr. Bensky.
Thank you.
It's great to hear that the freedom of speech is back in WBAI, and WBAI has been wounded, obviously, and it's time for taking care of it, but you cannot take care of a wounded person or something unless you clean it up completely, and you have some people that should not be in WBAI, people who for personal gain or for divisiveness and hatred, they spew it. I think that needs to be taken care of before you can start some kind of reconciliation. I think the slot of Carinol as well, Emil, should be checked and should be considered for. They need to have a little discipline. They didn't have the fortitude or the courage to stand up for what was right. What do you think?
Well, I think we an environment that was created that was an abnormal environment, and people some people behaved abnormally.
Some people behaved abominably too.
Yes. But you know, their information is still sound, and you have to weigh that too. I certainly plan to talk to everyone. I've had quite a few conversations with people, some of whom have not, still don't understand or refuse to understand what actually happened. They're trying to justify their position. In fact, I often quoted Martin Luther King, who quoted from Dante, saying the hottest places in hell are reserved for those who, in a time of great crisis, maintain their neutrality. We had many folks who tried to be neutral at a time when they really should have spoken up. Some of them recognize that, you know, you can't just come back and take everybody out because you didn't agree with the way that they work. Some people have responsibilities, family responsibilities that they had to consider. As long as they didn't join in, you know, trying to destroy the radio station, I think that they deserve an opportunity.
I don't know if you remember this, Bernard, but when I came to New York to that evening at the New School in November of 1999, there was a very hostile audience towards you there. We had already gone through living hell in Berkeley, not knowing it was going to continue another 3 years, but it had been terrible. I'd been fired twice. The whole station had been shut down. 106 people had been arrested, people brutalized by the police, the whole nine yards. And I was telling the story up on stage, and with another people, Jill Nelson was kind enough to be the MC that night, and you were saying, well, it's not time yet here at WBAI. We need more information and stuff like that. And people wanted to kill you. I mean, your face out of the audience. And what I said was, people move when they're ready to move.
Mm-hmm.
He is not against us, and the people at WBAI are not against us. They have expressed solidarity with us in various ways. Maybe they'll move. I don't know what the incidents will be. Maybe there'll be something that brings more people to our side. You cannot take somebody who, broadly speaking, has been on our side for as many years as you have and Amy has and just classify them automatically as traitors merely because they're not willing to act when we are acting. And people got in my face after there was in the hall and said, how the hell can you defend Bernard White? What's the matter with you? And I said, because I've been listening to him for years. I know him a little bit. And also about how human nature goes and how political movements go. And obviously, we don't know where we're going with this one yet, but these people have been on our side to some extent. Maybe there'll be more in the future, but I'm not ready to write them off just because they're not doing exactly what I want them to do when I want them to do it.
What we began to do was to try and hold a series of teach-ins to get the listeners and as well as the staff to understand what was evolving in Pacifica. And then finally, when what happened to WBAI, when the coup took place, that's when people began to realize.
It became ripe.
Right. Was it Marcus Garvey who said, when all other means fail to organize people, conditions will? Well, the conditions were right at that point, and that's when we began to gallop. In the direction of trying to regain or right Pacifica, move Pacifica back toward its mission.
Paul in Santa Barbara, thanks for joining us on this special day of programming from the Pacifica Interim Board.
Hi. I want to suggest that at least one national board meeting per year should be telecast live on the whole network, and that each local board should telecast at least twice a year on their local station that local board meeting.
What do you mean telecast?
Broadcast on the radio. And that at least once a year, in between the national board broadcast, there should be a day or half a day of some kind of network-wide programming, like the one we had, but, you know, not dealing with emergency issues, but so that people could hear news and interesting programming from all the other stations. And not so much even just to have the listeners updated on what's going on, but because if a listener hears programs from the other stations and knows that the rest of the country's listeners are able to hear that, it enormously increases the sense that a listener has that this is a network. And
well, you know, Paul, there's something very interesting you're getting at here, because there's been a lot of criticism, and one of the speakers who's been harping on this for years, who got up at the microphone today, said this is all about national programming, their desire to take over the network. They started this in the early 90s and blah, blah, blah. What you're pointing out is the other side of that coin, that there is something to be shared among the stations. And as somebody who was involved in the evolution and development of national programming, I can tell you that it was the furthest thing from my mind or anybody's mind to take over the programming of the local stations.
Yeah.
The idea was to develop something along the lines of what you're talking about, so we could share what's best among us and let people feel that there is this nationwide presence, that they're not alone, and that we have something to learn from each other.
Doesn't think, well, this is just my one local station, and they're real interesting, but they if they only think about that, then they don't have as much sense that there's a shared mission and some kind of national foundation and a good service that comes from that.
Thank you for calling, Paul. Very good thoughts. We're going to go to Senda in New York City. Hi, thanks for joining us today, Senda.
Hello. I am a passionate WVAI listener, and as Bernard White can tell you, I will nag about programming, which he gets from all kinds of people. I just want to say there's a large chunk of people like myself who are basically homebound, sort of homebound activists who can't go to meetings, who listen very intently to WBAI, are passionate about it, love this station, and people who I've turned on to this station, no pun intended, always say how I refer to it, and they call it my, you know, they say, I've been listening to your station. And I think BAI and Pacifica is different. I mean, I thought after the Christmas coup, that whole 13 months, I was going to have to throw away my radios. So I'll listen off here, and I'm enjoying the Pacifica National Meeting on the radio. Bye.
Well, first of all, hello, how are you? Glad you're calling, glad you're listening, and glad you're enjoying it. We had a lot of revelations. In fact, you missed what happened last night from the report from the executive director, Dan Coughlin, as well as Verna Avery Brown, his assistant. There are just a lot of things that that now we'll have a better informed listenership, and as a result of that, a lot of things that happened over the last 13 months won't be able to happen, because much of the national listenership will be on the same page with these issues.
Tomorrow morning, or actually in New York tomorrow afternoon at noon, Dan and Verna are going to be my guests on Sunday Salon. This will be on WBAI tomorrow from noon to 2, and they'll be sharing with our audience. It'll be 9 to 11 a.m. here on the West Coast, sharing with our audience some of the things they said last night in the part of the meeting that we couldn't carry. And one of there are a lot of reasons why we didn't carry Friday night's meeting, one of which is that it was scheduled on International Women's Day. Your station in New York, our station in Northern California, had long planned days and evenings of programming around this. There's a tremendous pressure on our programming, and for every person, I assure you, who says how wonderful you're broadcasting this meeting to get, there are plenty of people out there, and I wouldn't know how to quantify it, if they're more or fewer or what, who are saying, where's my favorite, what happened to this show that's usually on at this time?
Show.
The music, where's this, was that? And, you know, this is something we have to face. I mean, the people who listen to something usually like it and appreciate it. The ones who are turned off and say, yeah, what are they broadcasting that for? We have to make a balanced judgment somehow.
Mm-hmm. And once again, recognizing that we're not going to please everybody.
Liz in New York City, do we please you?
Well,
at least some of the time, a little bit of the time. A little bit of the time, do we please you?
Yes. I'd like to ask her not to speak over the chair when she's responding to the speakers at the mic. I know you have to do signal identification, stuff like that, but very often the chair and the other board members have things that I've been listening specifically to hear. The other thing I'd like to say is, as much as I love both of you guys and have been listening to you for years, I am a 25-year listener from the KPFA area who moved to New York just in time for the Christmas coup. I really want to hear more listeners' voices responding to this national crisis rather than commentary by people who have been inside for years. No offense, because I love you guys, but I really want to hear more listener response. And on that,
well, if you tune in tomorrow, we're going to have 2 hours of call-ins. Right now, we're going to have another hour of this probably. We're going to take probably 20 people. The plan was when this ended today, if it had ended on time, to open up the phones again, but obviously it's going to run over time. Believe me, I was the one who designed that. Let me come out of the closet this for today. I made clear that we had to have built in this hour and a half. I hoped it would be earlier in the day for listener phone-ins. I'm very sensitive to that issue, Liz, and there isn't any other network or any other media institution that's as open to this type of thing as we are. You'll probably notice when you just called, the producer who answered the phone in Berkeley didn't say to you, what do you want to talk about? Are you for and against them? Do you hate this or that? We don't call screen here. You know, we just find out what your name is in your city. And this is as most open and democratic as you can get call-in radio.
I just want more of it. That's why I want to hear more responses tonight, today.
Well, then maybe we'll put Melene on the air next from Los Angeles and she'll have a response. Hi, Melene. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, Barry. This is Nalini in Silver Lake, Los Angeles.
Melene, sorry.
Well, that's okay. You and I worked a little bit when I first became active supporting Pacifica about 6 years ago. We were talking about how to bring Pacifica more to the college seminars and trade shows. And I wanted to give a little perspective from Los Angeles, if I could. When I became I've been a listener since I was a teenager, 30 years ago. Always loved KPFK, but I've suffered through decades where things were not too cool on the station. And when my husband and I sold our business in 1993, I launched a foundation. It's called the Lazowitz Foundation, and I've been providing some media and event production support to nonprofits. And we contributed to KPFK, and we contributed a lot of equipment and furnishings and volunteer time. I enrolled in the intern program, which turned out to be the intern program that was canceled when we lost our intern program. And I've been supporting the station ever since. And I've been admiring so much of the good qualities of what we've had in Los Angeles. I've had an opportunity to help co-produce a lot of shows were able to broadcast voices from the Balkans.
Melene, what would you like to hear more of and what would you like to hear less of? Is that what you're leading up to?
Well, WBAI, New York.
What I wanted to say is that from the Los Angeles perspective, it almost feels like over the past several years we have been forced to deal with the fallout of some horrific situations at other stations. And, for instance, the lack of supplies, the lack of equipment. We started dealing with that five years ago, and we did raise the money for our transmitter. The money ended up spent because of lawsuits against Pacifica. And I wanted to spend a second to tell you that many of us in Los Angeles have really recognized the good work of Mark Shubb and the staff and the programmers in going through some of the stages that your stations are about to go through when you do have to go back to the craft of radio and all the good things you were saying about recognizing the needs of the listeners. Some listeners in Los Angeles don't like listening to Democracy Now! At 9 in the morning, and I can tell you that's not an uncommon statement I've heard, because we've developed some wonderful local talent with Mark Cooper and local talent we don't want to lose. And in a way, the new regime has made us feel that we are being taken more into a direction of the needs of other stations. What I wanted to say was, I recognize so much the good efforts of Mark Shubb over these past few years. There is still a lot of disinformation on the websites that are being given out, and I'll come down in person tomorrow and help point out some of these inaccuracies. But Mark Shubb, I believe, was terminated without just cause, and he was not in any way trying to destroy the station. As a matter of fact, he's done so much to rebuild and help it. One thing I do want to regain my trust in the new administration, as you would maybe call it, I would like to see him get all his back pay for vacation time accrued.
How do you know that he hasn't?
Well, we've spoken. I tell you, I've been talking. I've been working with the current leadership of, you know, the management of KPFK for several years now, so I do get the occasion to talk with him. He's owed vacation pay, many weeks of accrued vacation pay, during which he could have used a vacation, believe me. This war that has gone on in many cases has been visited upon us here in Los Angeles, and things weren't as bad as I think they were at some of the other stations, but he...
Okay, Melanie, I think you've expressed that at length and eloquently, and I want to go on to, we have many other callers, one of whom is Frank in New York City.
Thanks
for calling, Frank. Our telephone number is 1-800-958-9008. 1-800-958-9008. Hi, Frank.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Thanks for the program. And one thing that always gets my attention is when lab people and management and other people start talking about reaching out to the listeners, and there were a number of people touched on this today, in addition to your callers, and I would like to take this opportunity to draw attention to the fact that there are ways for listeners to get together and share their opinions, at least those who have access to the Internet. There are a number of, each station, in fact, each area, has listener web boards set up for their use, and they're all linked from goodlight.net. That's G-O-O-D.
Now, wait a minute. How do you let's get specific here. You log on to www.goodlight.net.
And then you
will
be linked to any of the areas, and you can discuss issues with other listeners on these web boards. There is also yahoogroups.com. I think there are a number of groups that you'll find listed there, and listeners can get involved in strategizing and talking about all these problems.
Let me ask you something,
sure.
Bernard and Frank, too, and actually Janice K. Bryan has just been fortunate enough to go out to lunch, and she's back.
our ex-con.
Busted for trying to meet in her own station. I had the impression, as I said before, I wasn't in New York except at that November 99 meeting at the New School. I had the impression that you had an incredible multiplicity of support groups all over the New York area. I'd see Connecticut friends of WBAI meeting, Staten Island friends of WBAI meeting, Brooklyn friends, New Jersey friends, friends.
That's part of what I was saying earlier. They didn't exist until the coup came.
Boom, they
all came into being.
So how do you then channel that energy or take advantage of that energy and do what Frank is saying and get a dialogue going, a discussion going, in a geographically dispersed area where people have lots of different ways of looking at things and a difficulty maybe in coming to meetings? Hell, if I lived in, you know, southern New Jersey, I'm not going to go to a meeting in Stamford, Connecticut of the Friends of WBAI.
Well, I think we have to encourage those groups to continue to meet, those people who can, and that they, you know, what happens on the Internet, too, is that what develops in a lot of those sites is a whole industry of pretense. You know, I mean, there's a whole lot of, you have to be wary because everything you hear on the Internet isn't correct. But
whereas everything you hear on WBAI is
absolutely
correct.
Absolutely.
Well, one thing that's happened at BAI is exactly, they've tried to address what you're talking about, Larry. There have been meetings trying to bring all these groups together so that we don't sort of, like, you know, diffuse the power, everybody running off their own little way doing different little things, and trying to get them together to come together with a strategy. And I think the first meeting was probably a couple of weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
where they, the outreach committees of these different, and there are a bunch of committees there, like you said, a multiplicity. But I hope this will work.
Janice is now on the Pacifica National Board, a nominee of the local advisory board at WBAI in New York. She previously was a producer, one of the Fired and Banned at WBAI.
Her first one band.
For the first one band, an honor. Dennis in Staten Island is on the phone with us. Hi, Dennis.
Hello. How you guys doing?
We're hanging in there.
Listen, I don't have an internet. I don't have a computer hookup. And it's, I guess, a real problem for listeners like myself trying to follow other than the programming on what's really happening. And the question I have is the national news. I notice we're getting free speech radio news. And I notice that some of the stations can block out signals from their own station. Can you explain to me where the new national news fits into the whole scheme of things? And is there still a Pacifica national news? And how do they feel about us listening to free speech radio news? You know, where does that all fit into the whole scheme of things?
I can tell you don't have a computer just because you could look this one up real fast. Let me just try to summarize this for you quickly. Dan Coughlin, who is now the interim executive director of Pacifica, was national news director of Pacifica. And he thought that it was a proper news story to cover Pacifica on the air. The power structure, the Mary Frances Barry Lynn Chadwick era power structure, tried to censor him from doing so and removed him from a job as national news director when he insisted on covering the story, which was being covered in the New York Times, the Associated Press, Washington Post, San Francisco Chronicle, and every place else.
It was the San Francisco Berkeley March.
The big march in Berkeley, he thought, when 15,000 people came out in the streets for a non-commercial radio station, it was like a news story, you know, for a community news network.
Amazing.
And Dan was taken off his job. Verna Avery Brown removed herself in protest. And the Pacifica Network News then became a more and more censored and locked down organization. 44, I think there were of us, and I was one of them, people who had contributed to Pacifica Network News said we would no longer contribute to a censored product. And a few months later, we started Free Speech Radio News as an alternative. It was entirely funded by donations from organizations like Friends of Free Speech Radio in Berkeley, which I was also a part of founding and helping to raise money for. And as more and more stations listened to it, affiliate stations around the country, they realized that it was more in key with the Pacifica mission than the Pacifica Network News was. So they dropped Pacifica Network News. And at the end, I think it was 51 stations were carrying FSRN, and only 12 were carrying PNN, four of those being the stations that Pacifica had under its control then and was censoring still any coverage of this struggle. When we inherited this organization with its $4.8 million debt, one of the recommendations of our audit committee, which, by the way, you can read online, you can read not only the financial summary, but the recommendations of the audit committee, was that we drastically cut back on expenses. And one of the first expenses that the new leadership looked at was PNN, which was costing, I think, $1.2 million a year for a newscast that almost nobody was taking, and the people who were listening to it thought didn't suit our mission. So the people at PNN were furloughed. It does not any longer exist, according to provisions in their after contract. And we are now all running Free Speech Radio News, which is supported in part by donations that KPFA listeners have made to KPFA. I've had the honor of being associated with FSRN since the beginning. I think it's doing a great job. It, of course, always could be better, but we're going to work to make it better, and that's what the situation of that is. Dara in Oakland, thanks for joining us.
Hi. The caller earlier talking about L.A., I was down in L.A., and the issues addressed were almost the same as what was on the underwritten public radio station. So I think that people down there need to understand that Amy Goodman was censored because of issues that she addresses on her show. And if the local talent addresses those issues, then there wouldn't be a problem at all. I also think that everyone that is against having professional sounding radio, I understand that, because going to broadcasting school isn't on the Pacifica mission, but I think it's also important to broaden the audience without narrowing the issues. And if people will listen to something that sounds professional and uses language that they understand, then you can deal with issues that aren't being addressed in other places. I do have a problem, though, with the amount of music that is so depoliticized, and I don't mean that all the music has to be about politics, but I listened to KPFA for a long time before I realized how unique it was compared to college or public radio, because the music shows never integrate any of the issues or plug any of the other shows, so it was a long time before I ran into a show that did that.